welcome to the AquariumX audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 76, recorded August 22nd, 2011.
All right, we're going to start out this show with a joke that Andreka from Oregon sent us. I like this joke.
It's a pretty good joke.
So a guy walks into a bar with a newt. He introduces the newt as Tiny. And the bartender asks,
"Why did you name him that?"
And the guy replies, "Because he is my newt." I like that. That was a really good one.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
So, did people like it or treat for you?
Some people did.
Our groovy interview.
The only responses I've gotten so far were positive ones.
That's good.
So people have said that they like that.
I thought it was pretty cool. So Hopefully you all went and checked out Tanked on Animal Planet.
And if you have not done so and you wish to do so, please do so.
Yes.
Yeah. We enjoyed watching the premiere episode that they sent us on DVD prior to its actual premiere.
Talking to Wade and Brett.
That was fun. They seem like really cool guys, and they have a really cool job, and seems like they have a lot of fun doing it.
So. How would that be? Your job is to build aquariums in groovy ways.
Yeah, not only just groovy, like amazing, over-the-top, outrageously cool ways.
Yeah.
So there you go. Okay. So, yeah, do check it out if you have not done so. And check out their website, too. They've got a website devoted to their business, and it's on the resources page for the premiere episode, our little interview with them. It's on the resources page for that, so check that out. Okay. Now.
What do we got first? Oh, yes. Okay, we have a little bit of a giveaway to do this week.
It's a giveaway. It's not such a little bit.
Not a little bit. It's all the way given away.
Well, it's not all halfway. The way.
Well, you have to provide a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Yes.
But just a first-class stamp.
Right. It should be fine. You can put two on there if you really want to be careful, but it should be fine. I'll explain what that is about. It is actually about some Daphnia eggs. See, I've been raising Daphnia for a while. I know I've talked about it not in the last couple of weeks, but I've talked about it fairly recently. And the thing is, these Daphnia are producing some Epiphia, or resting egg cases, whatever you want to call them. There are a lot of them that they're starting to produce, and so I gathered a small quantity of them, and here's the idea. Of course, Daphnia can reproduce sexually, which is what they've done in the case to produce these egg cases, but they also reproduce parthenogenically, or without mating, the females can give birth to other females. And then when weather conditions or other water conditions or so on stimulate them to do so, then some males are born, and then they mate and produce these egg cases. Otherwise, they don't produce egg cases. They give live birth. Now, I have a really nice strain of Daphnia that I got a while ago, and I would like to share it, but I'd also like to see how the Daphnia, if they are very different or if they're quite similar when they're reproducing sexually, because the population I started with, I got as a live culture that was reproducing asexually. And so with the genetic variation introduced by the sexual reproduction, I'm wondering if they're going to behave the same and so on. I expect they will behave similarly and be a very hardy strain of Daphnia all the same. But I would like someone else to try it out. So if you're interested in hatching these Daphnia eggs, it is quite easy, and I will give you instructions if you require them. Basically, you just put them in distilled water and wait a few days, and then they'll start hatching. So if you're interested in trying these, raising them for your fish, and you don't want to spend a whole lot of money on it, all you have to do is send a self-addressed stamped envelope, as I said, and I will send you some. But this is the condition. The condition is the first two email respondents requesting Daphnia eggs, those are the people I'll send it to, okay? I have a limited quantity right now. I may have more later, but I can only send it to the first two people who request it by email and also send self-addressed stamped envelope. Then I'll send them to you, okay? And you can try it out. You can set it out and try them out. I really have too much space to try to hatch them. I mean, not enough space to hatch them myself and see how they do. All my space for culturing is currently full with living culture. So that's why I can't try it out. But I also want to see, you know, how they respond for you. So if you would also be willing to send that information on to me once you get the culture going, that would be helpful. So, yeah, we'll just see whoever wants that and how that goes. All right.
Oh, we have a tip of the day.
We do. A while ago on Facebook, Andreka from Oregon asked about feeding assassin snails. She was wondering what they would eat, what would be the best way to feed them after they've eaten snails and so on, if they don't have snails to eat, what they should eat. And we talked about that a little bit. I mentioned that I put frozen mussels in a jar, or not a jar, I guess it's a water bottle that has some holes poked into it, and they climb in there and eat them and then climb back out, and the fish can't go in there and sabotage all the food. But I liked what Juliet said. She left a comment and said that she gets a little teeny terracotta pot, a very small one.
It is only like an inch tall.
Yeah,
or
an inch tall or so.
Maybe puts at a craft store?
I've seen them at craft stores like that. And then with a hole in it, small enough that Cory Doris catfish can't get in, because otherwise they would steal the food. And she puts some worms in there. I think it was blood worms. She puts in there. And the assassin snails crawl in and eat and crawl back out. So, good way to do it. I think it's more attractive than dropping a plastic bottle in there, which I can take out any time I want, but I think the terracotta pot has more potential for being able to leave it in there and still look nice. So,
yeah.
It's also fairly easy to do. So, thank you for that tip. I like it. Now, top 10 list.
Oh, yes. Andreka has requested a new top 10 list.
And this was a couple of weeks ago that she requested it, but we've been compiling the list.
And, yeah.
And asking others what they thought. But now we will hit the list.
She wanted a list of the top 10 things that you shouldn't get at the pet store. Things you should avoid getting at the pet store if possible.
For fish.
For fish.
Right.
Not like bird food.
Yes.
Obviously.
Which you should avoid getting for fish, too.
Definitely, because it's kind of crunchy for them.
Yes. But this list, as all of our lists, you know, we're going to do the standard disclaimer. There are other things we could put on this list, and so on. I mean, you know, this is sort of arbitrary, but these are at least 10 things. And I have to give an extra disclaimer here, because some
extra
of these
disclaimer?
Things...
disclaimer?
Yes, this is a disclaimer. Because some of these things I do use, but I don't use them in the way that they're intended, or something like that. So I'll explain that as we go
okay.
on. So, the first one is...
sand.
See, this was what Andreka suggested, because she found out that what had been bothering their filter was sand getting into the impeller and messing it up. And that'll certainly do some damage if it gets in there.
Because the grains can float around in the water instead of, like, gravel where they just sit there.
Yeah, gravel is usually too heavy to get up into there, but sand
unless you have Nemo in your tank.
Well, yeah. That's true. And avoid that at all costs, because he should be a free fish. But certain setups do need sand, like, you know, Tanganyikan shell dwellers, you want sand in there. Or certain puffers that bury themselves into the sand, they're ambush predators. You know, there are setups that need sand. Quite a few of them, in fact. But unless you are prepared to deal with it, it can be a big pain in terms of keeping it clean, in terms of keeping it out of the filter, and so on. So, unless you need it for a particular reason, and you're ready to make the adjustments that you need to be able to deal with it, then you can avoid it in just a normal tank. Okay.
The next one is buying expensive filter floss or pads at the pet store when you can make your own for so much cheaper.
Yeah, I think they're easier if you just go buy them. It's easier, right?
So if you have the money to pay for convenience and you want to do that, then go for it.
Then that's your choice. And that's fine. But I like to buy low loft bonded polyester filter batting and cut it up.
Oh, which can I throw out a little suggestion here?
Yeah.
If you have a fabric craft store in your area called Joanne, you can sign up in this. I'm not getting anything from them. It's just I'm on their list and it's so useful. You can sign up for their mailing list and they will email you and mail you in your actual mailbox periodic coupons. It'll be like 40% off the regular price of one item. Go in, get your quilt batting that you're using for your filter floss with that, and it's almost half as cheap.
Yeah, and that makes it like a very small fraction of the cost of actual filter pads. Mm-hmm. And you can use it with a variety of different brands. You just have to cut it and fold it to the right shape or whatever, or put it in the filter media mm-hmm. box or whatever it is. I use it with BioWheel filters. I use it with AquaClear. I use it with, what's the other one, Top Fin. I use it, you know, lots of them, different ones. I've used with so many different kinds of filters,
and
I can't even tell you.
You can get so many, you know, do-it-yourself pads out of one of those packages.
That it's just pennies.
Yeah.
Pennies per filter pad instead of $2 or $3, at least. So, there you go. Now.
What's next?
Breeding traps. They sell them, these little acrylic boxes with little slots in the bottom, as breeding traps for live-bearing fish. And I don't think they're very useful for that. I think it tends to stress the female out. I think it's too small to grow the fry in for very long. I don't like to use them for that. But I do like to use them. I use them as a holding tank for snails. I've used them as a place to grow certain plants that the fish would eat, like Pellia or something like that. I've used it to house baby bristlenoses with a high food density for the first few weeks when they're kind of sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make sure that they get plenty of food. I'll put half a dozen baby bristlenoses in there and just keep it full of zucchini and peas and stuff. Not full, but make sure there's always some in there. And, you know, it's a good way to make sure they do that. So I like
they're
them.
Good to use, but not for their intended purpose.
Right. At least not as live-bearing nurseries and maternity wards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next, algae pads, like algae scrapers.
Right, the pads, the ones that are like sponges, sort of. Mm-hmm. I don't like them very much because you have to put a lot of pressure on with them, and half the time, depending on the kind of algae you're dealing with,
it doesn't even come off.
Doesn't even come off. So I would say, my first and foremost, use an algae crew, and see if you can get an algae crew that takes care of the algae. If there are some setups or situations
Red
where that's not
your
good.
Lighting and
right, all that kind of thing, and try to take care of algae. There will be some algae, but it'll be manageable if you have everything balanced in general. But you will need to remove it periodically from the glass. There will be some buildup, even if you have a good algae crew. So then I use either magnetic scrapers, which I like better than the pads, or just to really efficiently get all that algae off, one with a blade. A scraper with a blade, not just a pad. Because you have to be careful not to scratch the glass. That's important. You can scratch the living tar out of the glass if you're not careful. You don't know what you're doing. But if you're used to it and you know how to do it, they are vastly superior to getting algae off, and you can get it off all the glass in a very short time. So that's what I prefer.
Okay. Next thing to avoid at the pet stores, feeder fish.
Yeah, and there are cases where you can buy them, but basically they're usually very stressed.
No, do you mean feeder fish to feed to things? Actually,
yes.
Uses feeder fish?
Like buying guppies okay. or goldfish to
not
feed
like
to things.
Not like take your 3-year-old to the pet store and they get to pick out a feeder goldfish for a pet?
Well, that's not a great idea
either.
None of those are great ideas because generally they are stressed. Many times they're sick. And, well, goldfish, which are the most common feeder fish, mm-hmm. as well as, I believe, the rosy reds, they're often called, the fathead minnows,
mm-hmm.
They contain an enzyme that destroys one of the vitamin Bs. It's thiamine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an enzyme thiaminase that breaks down vitamin B. So if you give a steady diet of those things, you can cause a huge thiamine
problem.
Deficiency in your predator fish that you're keeping and make them really sick. So, bad idea. Not to mention the fact that you can give your fish ick or whatever, some other disease, by feeding them.
Fish.
Yeah, from those fish. So,
what about for turtles, just in case somebody's a turtle? Can you use them for feeder fish for turtles?
You can, to a limited extent, but I would say that you probably have the same thiaminase issue if that's their steady diet.
The same way in the turtles.
Probably. I'm not an expert on that, but I would say if you have to use a live feeder, which you do with some things, mm-hmm. breed your own, you know?
Mm.
Breed guppies, breed convict cichlids, and use it if you're going to feed live fish.
And then, okay, unless you're like Russ, who says, I'm going to breed convict cichlids to feed to our other stuff, and then says, oh, look, the baby cichlids, they're so cute. I love them too much. I can't feed them to anything.
Well, I guess I've been guilty of that on occasion.
That's okay. I love you for it.
You could use ghost shrimp, too.
Okay.
Ghost shrimp are better. I would still quarantine them, so you don't, you know, there could be ick in their water.
So breed your own ghost shrimp.
Well, no, that's too hard. But that's too hard. If you're going to use it when you're going to buy...
Well, what kind of shrimp do we have that are breeding all over the place all the time?
Red cherry shrimp.
Including the ones that aren't red?
Yes.
Okay. It's the break!
Those are wild cherry fish. I mean, shrimp.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it? Okay, so the ones that aren't red are still red cherry shrimp.
Yes, they're still, they're just the wild color variety of those shrimp. Those you can breed really fast. In fact, Mick is going to talk to us later about that.
You can use those for feeders?
You can. Some people do.
So ghost shrimp you would just get at the pet store?
Yes.
But you might still want to quarantine them, you said?
Yes, I probably would, and just and feed them healthily and gut load them first before you use them as food. But, okay, that's probably enough for that one.
Oh, come on, everybody loves shrimp.
Okay, the next one is pH-reducing substances to add to your aquarium, and I really shouldn't have put it that way when I wrote this down, because there are some pH-reducing substances, like, you know, using peat in your filter, that are just fine, peat pellets or peat pucks that you can use that are great. But what I mean is, like, a liquid pH-reducing substance that you buy that's supposed to reduce your pH. Really usually not a good idea.
Work?
Usually what will happen is that there's some kind of acid, like... I think phosphoric acid, is that the one they use sometimes? I don't want to say the wrong one, but they put this acid in, it reduces the pH, you read it on your reading that it's lower because of all that acid, and then guess what happens?
What?
The buffers kick in a few hours later, maybe 10, 18, 24 hours later, kick in, and your pH is bumped back up to where it used to be.
Oh, and then you put more in, and then you run out, and then you go to the pet store and buy more, and they make more money!
Yeah, and it can also cause other problems too, like... Well, we won't even get into it, the problems it can cause, but it can cause a lot of problems.
We can get into the problems it can cause.
I don't know if we'll have time, but we...
Well, maybe we'll do that a different day.
Maybe we will. But the thing is that just use RO water instead. That'll work.
If you need to reduce the pH?
Yeah, if you want to run a system with lower pH, then you need to use RO water as part of your water in your system.
Every time you change the water, or just to get it down?
Well, to get it down, but then you want to keep it down, most likely. So you keep it down. There are other ways to do it, too, like running the peat. You know, that will help. And there are some things like that. But don't just get a liquid that says, you know, this will lower your pH. You know, it's usually not a good idea.
Uncle Nutsy's pH reducer.
Yeah. Snake oil.
Snake oil, yeah. Okay, the next thing is terrestrial or bog plants that are sold as aquarium plants.
I hate that, okay?
Bog plants? We don't need no stinking bog plants.
Exactly, at least not in an aquarium. In a paludarium, fine, but not in an aquarium, because they will eventually die and
rot.
They
don't want to be underwater.
Right, they can't survive indefinitely. Maybe they can survive even a few months, some of the hardier ones, but eventually they're going to die, and... they are sold in many stores just as if they were actual aquarium plants. So, dangerous. Please look that up before you buy a plant. Look up its name. Try to find its scientific name and find out if it is a... We can't go into all of them today, but, you know, there are many that are sold as aquarium plants that aren't actually really, truly
You see one plants. That you can't figure out, I'm sure you can email Russ and ask him.
Or even just Google it, you know. I wouldn't... You can always email me and...
That's what I said, if they find one that they couldn't figure
out. Right. Well, that's a good idea.
Okay, the next thing you should avoid getting at the pet stores is incandescent bulbs for the aquariums.
Right. They sell incandescent bulbs for aquaria. They're not very useful. They run too hot. They don't produce a lot of light for the amount of energy they use.
So why did they sell them for aquariums?
It was the only thing that was available for many years, really.
But since it's not... But any longer the only thing that's available, why do they still...
Probably because people buy them still.
Habit.
Yeah. And
it's tradition.
I guess so. It's kind of weird, but yeah, they're really not very useful for aquariums. The only plant I've ever grown successfully under an incandescent bulb is Java moss. And that was a long time ago, because I stopped using them a long time ago. So pet stores will sell them, but I don't
know. So they're just not worth it.
No, not really.
Okay, what's the next one?
I don't really like, personally, stick-on LCD thermometers.
Now, are those the ones that are kind of like a long rectangle and it has the color swatches with the temperature? Or is it,
yes.
is it those
yeah.
ones?
Yeah, and they can be all different shapes. Some of them are
I love those on baby foreheads, but I can never find them for infants. I should go get one from the pet store for the kids.
And just glue it permanently
not,
on all of
yeah,
the kids' foreheads.
Glue it permanently to their foreheads, but never put it on the fish tank.
There you go. They usually, if you put them on and then take them off again, they're ruined, generally. Some of them are accurate, some of them are not. Mostly not.
Mostly they are like a big sticker on your aquarium that you can't see through and is ugly.
Yeah, it looks ugly on the front of the aquarium. I put it on the side if I use one, but I usually don't, and I haven't for years. So, there you go. They're just not that great.
Okay, the next thing are those silly little teeny tiny weeny pansy setups that they sell intended for goldfish, which really are not worthy to hold even their fins.
That's true. If anything, you know, they'll say recommended for goldfish, and it's 1 gallon, 2 gallons, 5 gallons.
And those they have like 10 goldfish in the picture.
Right. All ridiculously too small for goldfish past a couple of months old. And, yeah, just bad idea.
And for more
what
than one
I
of
say?
Them.
There are some of them that will hold some fish safely, but, you know, there are a lot of tropical fish that are much smaller than goldfish that I would never even keep in some of those small tanks. Not that nano aquariums aren't great. You just have to make sure you're careful with what you stock it with. And goldfish is not one of those species.
Okay, what's the last thing on the list?
I would say those tiny little bowls or tanks recommended for bettas.
Along the same lines as goldfish.
Yes, just sort of the same thing. Except they get even worse for bettas because
they're like a quarter. Pint of water.
Yeah, some of them are really bad. Not that you can't use some of those larger ones. Like, you know, a 2 gallon tank can be fine for a betta. If, you know,
so get a tiny goldfish set up for the betta and maybe you'll be okay.
You know, sometimes that's okay. You have to be careful with that even. I mean, I like prefer to
some
keep bettas in 5 gallons or more myself, but it can be done and with success if you're careful with bettas, but not in one that's less than half a gallon. Ever,
you know,
really.
What usually is with those little betta ones is they make them to look cool and decorative, but not to be a functional fish tank.
Right. I would say you need at least a gallon, but I, like I said, I prefer 5 or more.
So here's my idea. If you want to get one of those little betta setups, because they're pretty, they look nice, they should get the kind of fish that you had in your apartment in college that you named Max. We should tell them about Max.
Max was an invisible, non-existent fish that lived in a desktop aquarium because we weren't allowed to have fish. So me and my friends set up a tank. My friends and I set up a tank. Sorry. That was...
Max was a very grammatically sensitive, invisible fish.
1.25 gallons. And whenever the people would come in to do the inspections, they'd say, you can't have fish. And I'd say, oh, we'd say, okay, well, we don't have one in there.
But
look
the
funny
thing is that so many people thought there really was a fish because Russ knows so much about critters, he can be really convincing when he's talking about the habits, and so he would give him this long spiel about how, yes, he's very shy, and he hides in the castle, and he only comes out at night, and la 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 la, and so everybody thought he really had a fish in there, and it was fun.
It was kind of fun, but
okay,
we were
that was
weird.
My tangent. I'm done.
Okay. So.
Okay, we have something from Kevin in Connecticut.
Yeah, Kevin, said their tank finished cycling while they were away on vacation. Went down to zero ammonia, zero nitrates, and just traces of nitrates. The pH dropped from the peak of 8.4 back down to around 7.4. Well, that's good that it did that. That it's finally finished cycling. And if you were gone long enough without adding additional ammonia, it could actually set the cycling off. It could retard the cycling process. But since there are some nitrates showing in there, that's good. Although I'm a little concerned that there are only traces of nitrates. I would expect
so
that to be more.
So what you're thinking is he was doing a fishless cycle.
Yes.
And they went on vacation. If they were gone too long without still adding little pinches of fish food or something, the cycle could have petered out and gone back to the beginning, basically?
In theory, it's possible. I don't know how long his vacation was, but that could happen in theory. But this may not be the issue in his case. He's going to talk more about...
What later. Is the issue?
Well, he said he had a problem with Danios. He put some Danios and some ghost shrimp in, and some of the Danios were dead within 24 hours.
Ew.
Which worries me a bit. The ghost shrimp apparently were fine, which is interesting.
That's
because
shrimp are usually more sensitive, aren't they?
To ammonias, yes. Yes, and that's true. And so one thing that I'm a little worried about is that the nitrates were only in traces. So how many nitrates did you have in there? What was your reading on nitrates?
And then, what do you want the reading on nitrates to be? What should it be?
Well, if it were something like 20 or 15 or 40, you know, you don't want to get too high, but just to see what's in there. You know, you want to make sure you're getting measurable nitrates. I'm not sure what he's working with in terms of how much ammonia he's putting in exactly, but I want to see how much he means by traces. And also, that's a lot of pH swinging, which is somewhat normal during cycling, because ammonia has kind of a high pH itself, but then biological filtration tends to reduce the pH of a system anyway over time. The bacteria produce organic acids and so on that reduce that, so there's some interesting things going on. But what is your pH normally out of the tap? Because that could help us understand what's going on a little bit too. Because if you have a biological system, I think we talked about this a little bit before, but when you reduce pH through a biological processes and then you do a water change with water that has a higher pH, then you can get cause pH shock, and any ammonia that is in the system, although there isn't in his system right now, it looks like, if there is any ammonia in the system, it becomes a lot more toxic because of the higher pH. So that's something just to think about. And he's wondering about Danios in a 10-gallon tank, because he said a few folks are worried about doing that because the space limits can be bad for him. Here's my answer. Kind of a weird answer, I guess. Zebra Danios are really active, of course, and they do best in a long tank with plenty of room, but they're also very adaptable. I've had them in a 55, and they dart around happily. They look like they're in heaven. But I've also kept them in smaller tanks, including 10-gallon tanks, although I haven't done that in a while. But I've even spawned them in a 1.25-gallon tank. Wasn't considered a permanent home.
How did we get them there?
Get them where?
In a 1.25.
Oh, I just put them in there to spawn them.
Oh,
and
okay.
I took them back out. But I kept them in there for, you know, in the small-scale egg layer breeding episode that we did. Talked about that a little bit. Just put them in there for about a week, take them back out, and then you get fry. Well, I would say that the short answer is 10-gallon is not ideal for zebra Danios because they are so active. However, they can live long-term in it, in a 10-gallon tank. And he said also that he found some compact fluorescent bulbs, Aquion brand, 6 inches. They fit the standard sockets in his hood, and they were about $10 each, which isn't bad. But he thought the plants would do much better with them. And that's not bad for a compact fluorescent bulb, really. I mean, I found them for 5 at a big box store. But, yeah, 10 isn't too bad. And the corkscrew valves that he had didn't make it, and so he replaced them with Java moss, and his wisteria is still hanging in there. And I think he's right. The plants will do much better, so great choice on there with the bulbs. I'm sure the Java moss should thrive and grow fast as long as your temperatures are fairly low. If they're below 76 or so, Java moss tends to do well, but over that it tends to slow down its growth quite a bit. And there are some other mosses that are sold as Java moss that have slightly different temperature tolerances, but in general, moss grows better at cooler temperatures. So if you have moss at 72, it'll grow a lot better than at 76. And 76, it'll grow better than at 82, for example. It almost gets to a standstill over 80, but it just does depend on the moss species. One thing is this: with those lights, you may have some algae issues coming, looming in your future.
This is your fishy fortune-telling.
Yeah, exactly.
Algae looms in your future.
So there are several things you can do, and depending on how many plants are in there, you might want to put some floating plants or stem plants in there, like water sprite or hornwort or something, that can sequester the nutrients that the algae will otherwise take advantage of. And if some other things you might want to try with that higher light is, as long as the plants are growing well, some potassium and iron in a fertilizer might be good. Most general basic aquarium fertilizers, that's the main ingredients, are potassium and iron. So you might want to look into adding some of that carefully, small amounts at a time, probably lower than the dose they request at first, to see how that goes. And you might want to try dosing with some Seachem Flourish Excel, which feeds plants CO2, which allows their growth to accelerate but also can, it's not advertised as this, but it can help keep algae at bay. I use it in my low-tech planted tank at work with my frogs, and it does great.
Is it just because it helps the other plants to be healthier?
There's two reasons. It seems to attack some, at least some types of algae directly. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how it does that, but it seems to. But it also boosts the plant's ability to grow because it boosts their ability, boosts their carbon dioxide that they get, or their carbon, I should say, not carbon dioxide. And then Kevin says after the Danios died, he looked for some other stocking ideas and got some Harlequin rasboras. Says they're great looking,
pretty.
Small bioload and pretty active. Love those. I love Harlequin rasboras. I think they're great. And he is also keeping the two Danios that survived. And he has a Cori, a Mellini Cori. I've never kept those. But I do love Coris. One thing about Coris is that they are generally schooling fish, so they're usually happier in a school. But I have had, a long time ago, I had a bronze Cori that did well for a really long time by himself. They can survive indefinitely like that. I do have a small school of pygmy Coris, and I love those. So Coris are great. They have a lot of personality, and they're fun. So hopefully that goes well.
Thank you for listening to this edition
said that
of the Aquarimax audio show.
Said about
for additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast,
so that's
message
good.
At 801-477-0669.
Or starting email us at info that you buy at the store and making your own setup. You can get a glass hood for one of those, and those are pretty good. And then they have like the Marineland Eclipse ones. You might need to look at reducing the flow of the filter if you get one of those, though. Maybe.
For the frogs.
So there's just a couple of items. And then one technical comment he had. He's been a podcaster in the past, and he says our audio levels are still fluctuating quite a bit. So we need to be careful with that. And he provided a link to something called a levelator, which can help even out your audio. So we're going to need to try that, and we definitely thank you for that, Kevin. So we'll give that a go and see if we can fix that. That problem, because we know that has been an issue. So thanks a lot, Kevin, and I hope that helps.
Okay, we have one more email to do today. It is from Mick in the UK.
All right. He says he liked the bonus show. It sounded like a very cool show to look at when we did the bonus piece on Tanked.
So good.
Good.
Glad you liked it.
And he said he's sending some pictures of his cherry shrimp tank. Said he only started out with four this spring that he picked up at an auction, and he put them in a fry tank to see if there would be a good cleanup crew in there. And then when he moved the fry, he moved the adult shrimp and found eight tiny shrimp.
Oh, yay!
And then he put them in a 10-liter tank, so a pretty small tank. He said they've been breeding like crazy, and he has sold, given away, or used as live food for cichlids, like we were talking about
before.
Over 100 from the original eight, and that was just from four this spring.
Wow.
And he noticed the numbers were starting to dwindle a bit a couple of months ago, so he left them alone in that 10-liter tank, and
as in, like, he quit selling them?
He quit removing them, yeah. And he decided to put them in a 20-liter tank this week, so he removed the plants, and the floor of the tank was just a complete carpet of shrimp, 200-plus, easily.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. And he said, amazing what can develop from just a small cleaning crew a few months ago, and all in a few liters of water, the box filter. And he's also got a colony of crystal reds in a 10-liter tank. Two buried females, that's like pregnant when they're carrying the eggs that have already been fertilized and laid, but they're holding them.
So is gravid, is they've got eggs, but they're not fertilized yet? Does it just depend on the critter?
People usually don't refer to that when the shrimp, they just talk about a shrimp being buried, generally.
A shrimp is never gravid?
Well, I guess you could say if it's holding eggs, and you can see the ovaries in certain ones when they're maturing and the eggs are maturing in the ovaries. Mm-hmm. You can tell that in certain shrimp.
So what do you use the term gravid for?
For shrimp, it's just not usually used because as a practical matter,
what do you use it for?
Not
for shrimp.
Fish that are carrying eggs and things like that.
So fish are gravid, but shrimp are buried.
Yes.
Buried doesn't sound like a very pleasant.
Well, it's buried, B-E-R-R-I-D.
Okay.
Because it's like they're carrying a whole bunch of little berries.
Okay,
like a berry
bush. That sounds a lot better than shrimp got herself buried. You know,
That sounds kind of bad.
That doesn't sound very good.
No, it doesn't. Well, he's mentioned that he had some teeny ones, which already have the red and white stripes, which those crystal red shrimps are beautiful. Even though they're only about 2 millimeters long. And, you know, it's amazing to just think of the reproductive potential of cherry shrimp. I have noticed how prolific they are firsthand as well, like Kelly mentioned earlier in the show. I would love to keep crystal red someday. I never have, but they are beautiful. And some are very expensive. Depending on the color pattern and the quality of the color pattern, you can... hundreds, thousands of dollars even. Crazy. For one shrimp.
That's kind of silly, yeah, honestly.
But they're beautiful. And Mick continues that he has a friend who's big into show guppies, and he's noticed, as Juliet has mentioned with endlers a couple of weeks ago, that the sex ratio can be skewed by varying the temperature, and his observation is that it has to be done at the conception level, and not while the female is incubating the young. But the conception time seems to, if that's that correlates with temperature. And so I thought that was cool, because it kind of correlates with what Juliet was saying about her endlers. And finally, he also noticed that we mentioned we had kept leopard geckos before, so he included a picture of their leopard gecko that a friend of theirs bred. So
we love leopard geckos.
He enclosed a copy to whet our nostalgia. So,
oh, well, thank you.
That works. I like that. All right, everyone. Well, I think we've reached the end of yet another.
It's the end of the podcast as we know it.
And that's fine. But
yeah, I feel fine.
Yeah. So thanks for all of your contributions, everyone. And best fishes. Have a fishy week.